process concerning the recreational advisory panel when they make recommendations is that it would come up through the committee to the council. Because of the way these decisions have been made, they are having a meeting on the 15th of February to look at the alternatives for cutting their catch after yesterday's vote. And there is not time enough to get that back through the normal process. So I'm going to ask that, unless somebody objects, that we just authorize Tom to communicate the decision from the RAP on how they want to take their poison and get that to the regional administrator. Anybody object to that? Okay. Mary Beth?
I don't object to that. I think that could work fine. But, you know, something strange comes up. Maybe Tom could bring it to the executive committee. I mean, but if it all looks fine, then I think it should move right along.
Yeah, it may even have, you know, the executive committee. Well, we could do it. We could do it via email. Yeah. Is that okay with Doug?
Yeah, and I just assume that we'll get a report of the RAP meeting soon afterwards so that we know what their suggestions are.
Dave Gates.
As I remember, they had a prioritized list of how they wanted their poison doled out. But that list probably is what I'm wondering is what happens if that list doesn't meet the regional administrator's goal or whatever. In other words, I know originally it was like, well, we want to increase the minimum size. And I don't think that's going to do it. And it's not something I'd probably support. So, you know, then it comes to whatever was next. I think it was reduce the bag limit. I'm just curious how this is all going to work out. If in other words, if they come up with something and then the service doesn't agree with it and the council has never even done anything with it, does that make a difference or not?
Well, I mean, the service has the authority to do it, and it's in consultation with the council. I think that in the past they have had a priority of what things should come first, and if that's not enough, then you go to the level two and level three. They may come back with exactly the same thing, or they may come back with something, you know, different than that this time. And I just have to assume that, you know, if they go through all three of those items, there's enough leeway there for them to get cut back to what is going to work.
Okay. Then I guess my next comment would only be that I hope that they can be provided with as much information as possible. In other words, if we, you know, raise the size limit to 30 inches and cut ourselves to two fish, does that do it or whatever it is? And somebody can, you know, make that kind of an analysis more or less on the fly at the meeting so that they don't, you know, suggest something that basically has absolutely no chance of being done.
In the past, Tom has provided some of that information that he has had to them. David Pierce.
Yeah, regarding the poison they would like to take, certainly they have to give this a great deal of thought in light of the fact that their urgings were not attended to. That is, the request from them not to have sector access to the Western Gulf of Enclosure area. That access, I suspect, is going to be granted. So that changes the whole complexion of the nature of their fishery, and especially if their claims are true, that the availability of cod in particular will be dramatically cut back due to the fishing by sectors in those areas. I suspect they'll have to rethink their position and then offer up something that would somehow factor in that likely impact to their fishing. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's important now to give them a chance to think about the poison.
Okay, so I'm assuming with all those comments, we still, oh, Frank.
Yeah, just a quick point. I agree with the process there, but I think we're all assuming that cod's going to be the problem. I think the biggest problem for the wrecks is going to be the haddock. I don't really think there's that much of, like, it'd be, codfish, I think, is only about a 20%. I could be off a little on what they need. Haddock is huge. That's where the problem's going to come in.
Okay, still without objection? Okay. Move that forward. That's my list. We're going to new other business. Maggie. Yeah, I'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question of the regional administrator regarding his announcement. Excuse me, I have food in my mouth. His announcement of the 50%, being able to cover 50% of the at-sea monitoring costs. Is there a dollar figure associated with that?
I think the dollar figure was figured on $500 per day, right? And that we were going to cover $250 per day.
So my understanding is in the past, when we've asked for estimates of the total cost of the at-sea monitoring part, which is different from the NEFOP, it was about $4.5 million. So are you saying that you have 2.2, or you have, regardless of how many days are actually at sea, that we pay 50% regardless of how much money is in your budget?
I want to be careful with my consigliere over there because I'm still not sure what an acceptable amount of coverage is going to be. And I don't know, and we're not totally in control of that yet. So I'm a little reluctant at giving a total budget number yet. But I think your point, Maggie, that you're getting at is if there's fewer trips, the budget amount is going to cover a greater percentage of them. And you're absolutely right, and that's the reason that I'm going back and saying, hey, does this mean, given the vote yesterday, that whatever we have in the budget might cover a greater percentage? And if that's the point you're making, I get it, all right? So, yes, the only variable is that we have to think about what percentage of trips are we going to be required to cover. But you're right, the number of trips is something that was is going to be lower, and that may mean that we can pick up more than 50%. We're going to look at that. I don't want to make any promises, but we know the impact of the cost of observers is very high. That is why we have covered in the past 100% of at-sea and onshore costs in the past. And, you know, if we can, we'll do it in the future, until the industry gets on its feet. Is that the point you want to make?
Yeah, that is. Thank you, John. Yeah. Also, if you, and I appreciate that because I think that, you know, that will be critical, you know, to whoever is left standing to be able to, you know, be able to make as many trips as they can't afford to. When you're looking at that, we'll hope you also look at the, you know, the redfish exemption that we've asked for, which will require 100% observer funding. We, you know, if there's any, you know, available funding to move over to that program as well, that would be appreciated. Otherwise, you know, I mean, that's a very low-value fish that we're not going to get a lot of money for until we can figure out a way to get the consumer, you know, familiar with it again. So I hope you'll look at that as well. But I do appreciate your response to my first question. Thank you.
Ellen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ellen Gaethel, fishing vessel, Ellen Diane, sectors 11, NEF sectors 11 and 12. And I am asking this question of the regional director for my sectors. I'm wondering if, in light of the decision that was made yesterday, if the and the fact that the fishing industry is going to be required to pay for 50% of the observer coverage, if we are going to have a recalculation on how those observers are distributed between the fishermen. Right now, I believe they're done by sector. And I believe a more equitable way to do this, and we've discussed this before, would be by pounds of fish landed. Is there any plan to rethink how the observers are going to be distributed between the fishermen?
Can I phone a friend on that, Ellen?
Yeah, I would really appreciate, though, if you could get back to us in public. Yeah.
Hold on.
If I had a friend, I'd phone him, too. But
George, that's not true.
Not that I know of. I mean, this comes down to the SBRM calculations that the center does. And I don't think it's based on pounds. I think it's
not. It's by sector, and each sector... I mean, the sectors that are, and I'm not trying to disparage the different size boats, but the amount of fish and the amount of money that's coming into these vessels and the amount of fish landed is very disparaging. And if you don't use that to help account for, I mean, we had, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we had a huge, a higher percentage of observer trips in 2011 than many of the other sectors, and we are one of the smallest sectors, which means that the fishermen in our sector would have to pay more on their day trips than some of the boats that are going for several days. And it's just not equitable. It's adding insult to injury by doing that. So I am requesting, if that is not going to happen, that you relook at how you distribute them. It is also a very poor scientific method to get information. You're not getting an equitable amount of data by doing your observer trips that way. And that is the big reason not to. It's scientific data needs to be as good as possible. If we can't do everything right, we should at least do that right. Thank you.
Dave, did you have your hand up?
I'm Dave Wallace, and now I am here representing my clients who operate a very large clam processing plant in New Bedford and operate a number of vessels here in New England and also vessels in New York and in New Jersey. I was surprised and flabbergasted when I saw the FR notice on reopening of the of Georgia's banks under the PSP protocol that exempted that eliminated a large portion west of area, closed area 2, for us to fish in. That area is open to trawling. That area is open to scalloping. It's open to everyone but us. And then, so I came, and Terry had agreed to put forth a motion to request that the regional administrator, when they publish the final rule, drop that area out of the restricted area only for clam vessels, simply because, number one, it's discriminatory. Number two, the area that of clam fishing is conducted where clams live. Clams live in high-energy sand. Our gear is designed to catch clams in high-energy sand. Our gear is not designed to go into gravel, cobble, rocks. A clam dredge alone cost about $60,000. You can tear it up in no time flat if you tow it in the wrong place. Our vessels have the best electronics as far as sounding gear that money can buy, so that we do not set our gear in rough territory. And there's no point if we did, because there's no place for the clams to live either. You know, this is just logic. The reason that we need to have the area available to us is, as all of you know, Georges Banks is a giant gyre. And it circulates in a clockwise condition. And when there is a PSP bloom on the banks, it typically is on the outer portion of the banks. The area that has been carved out goes well into the center of the banks. The PSP protocol is a unique FDA, states, NOAA, EPA document that does at-sea testing by the industry and then dockside testing. And it's designed never to have to close Georges Banks again, because if there are no areas that test five samples negatively, then the vessel can't fish. Now, they can go test all kinds of other places. So the more area that there is during a bloom, the better chance that we have to be able to fish on the bank. There are a significant number of clams on Georges Shoals. They're by Michelle's own statement earlier today, Georges Shoals has glacial rocks, and it has big sand mounds and sand shoals where the clams live. And so I am probably flabbergasted that this council, apparently at their last meeting, decided to discriminate against the clam fishery, which, by the way, is the largest fishery in terms of tons landed in New England, surpassing herring. And we have approximately 200 employees and two shifts in New Bedford. We just put on the second shift, because we are going to focus more on Georges Banks. If there were to be a bloom and the clams were okay in Georges Shoals, but we didn't have access, we would have no choice but to shut down the second ship and just run ocean cogs, which are caught off of Long Island. And so I am just really surprised that that the council would treat that so lately. Now, I can tell you that shame on me for not attending every second of every council meeting up here, because apparently I need to be the watchdog, and I really hate to think that I have to do that and my clients have to pay to try to protect themselves. And so I hope that someone will make a motion that says to the and writes a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service that that this council supports the PSP protocol on Georgia's Banks for all bivalves, not just clams, and that when the final rule is published, that it allows the clam industry to fish anywhere mobile tending bottom gear is allowed, which is only reasonable and rational. Be happy to answer any questions.
Terry.
Yeah, I am prepared to put that motion forward if Rip would allow it to be put forward.
Put it forward. Put it forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I move that the council send a letter to the regional administrator. Too fast, Karen. Requesting that the final Georgia's Bank PSP protocol rule allow the clam fishery to fish in any area where any bottom tending mobile gear is allowed to fish. He wrote it for me.
Is there a second to the motion? Laura? I don't know. Do we need to recap why it is that we have this area closed? I'll do my best, and George will correct me. The service put out a notice that they were going to reopen that area. I think there were some issues. We actually requested that it stay open a little bit longer so we could comment on it, I think. Is that correct? And
well, first of all, it was a specific area of Georgia's Bank that was proposed. It was a fairly large box. And it was at the request of the Mid-Atlantic Council and the industry that we reopened this now that we had this protocol in place that made it safe to do so. And we proposed opening the entire area. At, I think, your November council meeting, it may have come up under other business. There was a comment from the public suggesting that the council, either the whole council or at least the Habitat Committee, should have an opportunity to comment on that proposal. Since there wasn't an opportunity at that meeting, you sent us a letter. I don't remember if there was a motion made or whether it was just by consensus. You sent us a letter asking that we extend the comment period on that proposed rule, and you also sent us some detailed comments of concerns you had about a specific areas that you're considering under the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. So our response to that, and you can blame me because this was my idea, frankly, that rather than delaying giving the clam industry what they wanted, which was access as close to January 1 as they could get, if we had delayed the entire rulemaking, we still wouldn't have the area open. We'd still be waiting for your comments if we'd, you know, done what you had asked us to do. But since your comments seem focused on concerns about potential impacts on the areas that you were still considering under the omnibus, we carved off that portion, which is about a third of it maybe, of that box. Did not open that immediately. Opened the other two-thirds effective, it was January 1, I guess, or close to it. And rather than go directly to final rule, we left it at an interim so that the council or the public or the industry could comment on what was done, with the understanding that once the council decided whether it did want to close those areas or protect them in some way and had concerns about hydraulic clam dredging in there, we could deal with that in that final rule. So that's where we are. We have opened about two-thirds of that area now, still under comment. We cut out this one section pending what your council wants to do, and that was to try to accommodate your concerns as well as the industry's concerns.
Discussion. David Pierce.
It's hard to comment on the motion in light of the fact that we have no charts before us indicating what areas are off limits for now, the areas that that you felt we wanted you to reserve judgment on until we deal with the omnibus. So I don't know what areas we're focused on.
By the magic of technology, you may see them shortly. Mary Beth.
I don't think it really matters, Dave. It's really kind of a process principle that if the area is open to other bottom tending gear today and there's an opportunity for a clam boat to go there tomorrow, the omnibus is not in place. And we should not be excluding the clam industry from that area until we take action on the omnibus, and then the clam industry would have their opportunity to comment on whether they should have access to certain areas. I mean, that's the right process, to exclude a fishery from an area for some future potential action that hasn't happened yet. It's just not right. That's not right. That's not fair, and it's not what we should be doing. I'm not really clear on how the comments got there in the first place that raised the issue, but because I don't recall having the conversation at all. But, I mean, that's the real issue, is that the omnibus it's not closed now to other people. Why would it be closed to the clam industry just solely? It's not fair.
David.
Well, the point taken. However, I would wonder what fishermen with bottom tending mobile gear would say if indeed in these areas now the surf clam vessels are allowed to go. I guess I'm still influenced by comments made by Rodney Avila when he was on the council, and he spoke about the surf clam fishery, the ocean quahog fishery, and how the bottom gets dramatically changed, maybe temporary, but it gets turned over as fishermen legitimately fish for surf clam. So I don't know if there'd be any reaction from those particular fishermen, if indeed now suddenly all these areas were open to surf clamming. So my point is, I still don't completely understand, the issue.
Herba.
Well, I think, that's a different issue. The area was closed for a specific reason, and that's for the PSP, and not for any other reason or concerns relative to other fisheries or habitat. And so if you close it for a certain reason, and then you can open it because that issue was resolved, I think it's like double jeopardy. You want to keep it closed for something that was unrelated to the original closure. To me, that just doesn't add up, and it is bottom tending gear, and we're letting other people fish there.
Peter Kendall.
No, I agree with Mary Beth that it should be open to everybody, and Dr. Pierce. It was a couple years ago, and I personally followed the clam boat around because there was plenty of codfish. They were eating the clams, so it was turning over the body, but they they loved it. It was attracting the cod.
So,
to explain that the chart that this is the actually from the Federal Register notice that was sort of the follow-up notice after the council made some comments. I was looking through September motions, and it must have been a sort of consensus request. And I know it included, you know, can we get some more time to make comments? And if not, then let's see what we can say. And our comments were basically that we're developing some potential management areas in and around Georgia Shoal, and we discussed those earlier today, and they're shown in the hatched. There were originally three sort of alternatives for access for the surf clam fishery, and originally it extended sort of all the way across and encompassed this corner as well. This was the largest of the three, and then there were a couple of smaller options within that. And what the in response to our concerns mentioned, you know, we understand that surf clam quahog hydraulic dredges can't fish the most complex type of substrates. They fish in and amongst those substrates. And as Dave mentioned and as I discussed earlier, Georgia Shoal is basically these sort of long fingers of complex substrate interspersed with fingers of sand. And so the clams live in the fishery targets in the fingers of sand that's in this area. So the area that's currently proposed for access for them starting, well, I guess, has already started. January 1st is the white area, and what I think the request would be is to not, you know, close them off from that northeastern corner because it is currently open to other types of fishing gear.
Thank you. Laura.
Not to belabor the point, but I do think what Mary Beth said is absolutely right. I mean, we're not opening areas that we've determined through the Habitat Amendment are okay to be opened. I don't think that we can close areas without the Habitat Amendment being passed. So to say, oh, we're looking at it, so you can't go in there, it is double jeopardy. And it's not consistent, to go back to my consistency, please. Thanks.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaither.
Just a question for George. Was the rationale, George, that those areas might close? And I'm not quite understanding the situation here, I think.
Well, again, just to be clear, I mean, we had proposed opening the whole thing, and that's what we intended to do. So what we did was based on what this council asked us to do, which was to give them more time to well, you actually asked us to delay opening the whole thing. And what we did instead was to notch off the part that your comments seemed to be concerned about because you wanted more time to be able to consider what the impacts might be and whether you wanted us to do this. It's actually not, I don't think the rules said, and it wasn't our intention that we would necessarily wait till till this council took final action on the omnibus. It was to give you time to consider what you wanted to do. So if you decide that you don't want to protect those areas between now and then from surf clamming, we can go ahead and do the final rule and add that area back. But the alternative was to delay the whole thing, which wouldn't serve the industry well. They were anxious to get in there and start fishing. Some vessels have been doing it for years under under an EFP to test this protocol. So they were ready to roll, and we didn't want to have to put them off several months because of this council's concern. So this was the compromise that I suggested, to let them get going and let you have a chance to decide what you wanted to do, if anything.
Okay, I understand that. So there's apparently a letter that we sent that I have no recollection of whatsoever. Michelle, did we send a letter? Or do we have a copy of it, or is there a way to access it?
We did. I'm sure it was within the council mailings at some point. I'm not really sure when. It would have been like the end of September or so. I mean, I can maybe just – do you want to put it up?
I think this actually came up at your November meeting. And it came up at the very end, and it's possible, Mary Beth said she hadn't heard it. It's possible people might have even left at that point. It came up, I think, under other business.
The letter I have is dated September, so it must have come up at the September meeting.
Oh, okay.
No, I think this might be wrong. I think this is the wrong one. That's scallops. I can sort of read through the meat of it. You know, we put a chart in the letter that showed the three PSP access alternatives and then our proposed management areas on Georgia Shoal. We said the alternatives in your proposed rule overlap spatially with one or more of the areas we're looking at in the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. Yeah, it's that one. The areas were designed to encompass habitat types likely to accumulate adverse effects of fishing based on cobble and boulder substrates. We estimate the effects of mobile fishing gear are more than minimal and not temporary. This was all actually discussed in the environmental assessment prepared for the services proposed rule. We said, although SASE assumes that hydraulic dredge gear doesn't operate in cobble and boulder-dominated habitats, the sand and granule pebble-dominated areas between are estimated to accumulate adverse effects resulting from hydraulic dredge activities. Two of the three areas had a greater overlap just because they were larger. We kind of commented when we were hoping to wrap up our process. And the letter opens with asking for more time to comment. So we didn't, ask for the areas to be changed so much as pointing out, where there's some overlap with what we're currently doing.
Dave Pierce.
Okay, so if we pass the motion, then the service would open those two areas on the northern edge, the so-called Georgia Shoals area, right? Okay, and those are two areas that we're considering as part of the omnibus. It makes it interesting because I don't doubt that they can get in there and find the sand ridges and fish for surf clams in those ridges. So maybe we should be getting their charts to use as part of our determination as to whether or not all or part of those Georgia Shoals areas should be closed to dragging to our mobile gear, because if they go in there to fish, then clearly there is area within those zones that should not be off limits to bottom trawl because it can't be critical habitat. Right? So I have no objection to letting them go in there, but it's going to have a strong influence on my thinking as to whether or not those two Georgia Shoals areas should actually be off limits to mobile gear through the omnibus. Sounds like a lot of that area is not fragile habitat or habitat of critical concern. It's a lot of sand ridge, so some of it should be allowed. Access should be allowed from other mobile gear and not restricted. So, it's that could be very, very instructive information for us to use as part of the omnibus.
Anyone else on the council? Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do remember this coming up under other business in September. And the comments that were provided, I'm inclined to be sympathetic to the request here. I just think that this got handled a little bit. If we could have had the letter presented to us and saying this might be brought up as an issue under other business, because it probably wasn't in the public notice of this meeting, it would have helped us. I'm just a little bit reluctant to throw up a map and, have someone come up and have us remember a letter that was written 6 months or 5 months ago on this to make the decision. That's where I'm having a lot of discomfort with this, although, as I said, it certainly on the surface sounds like something that we certainly should allow. Is there a time crunch on this? Is it something that we could consider at the Habitat Committee meeting and then make a formal decision on this at the April meeting? Or is this something that it got to get in there right now? And I understand the fair and equity fair and equitableness of it, but.
I'm going to Paul Howard and then Mary Beth.
The time crunch was back then when we had a different timeline. We didn't want to take action one way or the other until we knew what we were going to close. So we didn't want that action. But now our timeline is a year from what it was before, or much longer. So it's not time critical any longer in terms of making our habitat groundfish decisions. We're not making them. But our request was to delay the opening till we could pass our omnibus amendment and make the final alternatives.
George.
Yeah, a couple clarifications. The motion is very general. We're really only talking about the box that we proposed, not everywhere, because that's outside the scope of the rulemaking we've done. And secondly, I think the appropriate way to do this would be the comment period is open to all the public. So your comments should be to us on the interim rule. We'll have to consider all comments that we receive, just to be clear. It's not just this council can't just decide, but the action we took was primarily on the basis of a public comment we got and this council's response. So it should be a response to the interim rule comment period.
And how long is that comment period open for?
I don't remember. I don't have the rule. I didn't know this issue was going to come up at this meeting, so I don't have that rule.
And the way to do it would be just for the comments, if we pass this, the comments would be to open up the entire closure.
Right. I think what you would do is reference the letter that you sent us earlier, say that you have had a chance to discuss it as a council and or get input from the Habitat Committee, and as a result of that, you believe that you're no longer concerned about the impacts of delaying or keeping that area closed any longer, or something that affecting provide whatever additional rationale you think is necessary.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to address some of Doug's concern about process, and it seems to me, and of course I don't really recall the issue at all, but we've been told that this came up under other business in September and was not on the agenda. If it had been on the agenda, Dave would have been here. So it seems like if we did it under other business in September without it being on the agenda, we should be able to undo it under other business at this meeting.
Doug.
Well, I see things a little bit differently. Other business in writing a letter is different than asking to make some kind of decision here as to whether we're going to move forward, whether we're going to recommend this. As I said, I am sympathetic to this. I'm just wondering if there isn't just some time frame where we could I could sit there and have a chance to read the letter that we originally provided and get my head around this. I'm just a little bit concerned about doing this on the fly.
And Dave Preble, then I'm going to go to the audience.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Doug's concerns. I am sympathetic to this. But I really need to have a little more information. I agree with Doug.
Gibb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. We were the dissenting comment on this, brought this to your attention in, I think, both in September and November. Our concern is twofold on this. One is the effects of the on habitat. The SASE model that has been developed treats hydraulic dredges as its own gear type and is very clear that the impacts of hydraulic dredges are greater than that of scallop dredges and trawls. So it is a different beast altogether. And since this area has been closed for the PSP closure since 1991, we wanted the council and the agency to go into this one with a full knowledge of what's going on. And not since all gears are not created equal, we wanted this to be hashed out, have the full benefit of the Habitat Committee looking at this, looking at the impacts on that those areas of Georgia Shoal that have been highlighted throughout the SASE process. And we were hoping that it would get a full discussion at the Habitat Committee. The other issue is the existing fisheries that are happening out on Georgia Shoal. And I know that one of the council members talked about the clam dredgers essentially chumming up cod. That's an interesting slant on it. But as we've been hearing that those areas are important for winter flounder and other species that are out there, we want to make sure that there's full consideration of the impacts of this new access going out into this area and what might be going on in that area. So we just wanted it to get on the council's radar. Our initial request was that this be sent to the Habitat Committee and that it be fully discussed at the Habitat Committee and that the council give it the consideration through that due process. So while we were appreciative of the work that Michelle did to get the technical information to the agency on this to inform their process, I think that sending this to the Habitat Committee to get the opinion and sending it up through the line is the way to go on this one. So we hope that you'll vote this one down and or maybe amend this to send it to the Habitat Committee, revisit this in April, and move on from there. Great. Thanks very much.
Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. While we don't have a direct interest in this, do support this motion going forward, and also very concerned about the process on how this has all evolved. Just, you know, as someone who monitors the council closely and very concerned about these things, this has never been discussed at a committee level or anything. There's apparently this letter. Has anyone seen this letter before today on the council? I mean, who did you give direction to the council to the staff for what they put in this letter? I mean, I'm very concerned about who was speaking for the council, because if there are just letters coming out being signed by the executive director, but the council hasn't given any direction to what's actually in it, that's not how this works. So I'm just very concerned about how this process has evolved. I mean, I'm curious for a response to that.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the letter requests a 60-day extension so we could comment on their proposed rule or whatever it was. That's all we're asking for at the time, because we were doing our habitat groundfish amendment, so we would have that information in front of us.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It was all timing. So we asked for a 60-day delay so we could send it to our Habitat Committee to comment, as directed by the council, asking for a delay.
Then the agency has stated, though, they carved out that box based upon comment from the council. That's, I mean, George clearly stated that. So where was that comment that said, carve out this box?
George?
I'm not sure that you asked. No, you didn't ask for the box. But the same letter that asked for the delay had, as I recall, some fairly extensive detailed comments about what the council's concern was. I don't know who wrote it. I just know we got it. And in response to those concerns, again, I didn't want to delay. It wasn't my decision, but my recommendation was we not delay letting the clam industry start with something while we work through this. So we set aside this piece for later discussion and comment with the understanding that once the council did get a chance to think this through and let us know, we could reopen it then if that looked like the best thing to do, or to, you know, change the size of the box or the shape of the box or whatever.
I've got to comment on this. I mean, we get criticized and beaten up for not acting quick enough on many of these issues. And this issue, there was a decision made at the council, and it has been standard practice to turn it over to staff to get that done on these letters. If you want these things to come back to the council, you can have another 60-day delay on all of these things before there's an answer. So, I mean, I don't understand your concern about that part of the process.
No, my concern isn't about the timing of things. It's more the substance. I mean, basically, the council said write a letter asking for 60 more days. That's good. I get that the agency was trying to move forward and get this area open to the extent they could. That's good. The concern is when you have a substantive comment that no one on the council has weighed in saying this is an area of concern, carve it out. I understand it looks, sounds more like, though, that the agency interpreted the letter to say that, and they went that way rather than the council saying carve out this area. That's the way it was originally presented, but that doesn't seem to be actually what happened. From this back and forth, what we have learned is that these areas were highlighted and we are considering this omnibus. The agency took it upon themselves to carve it out. I'm just trying to figure out how this happened, because it was very clear from the conversation no one quite understood how this area got happened. I actually applaud the agency for getting this the area that they did get open on January 1st. They showed flexibility that's not normally shown, frankly, and that's good. Just the concern is how did this area get carved out, and now we have a better understanding of it, and I just would encourage you to move forward with this motion and just try and get this issue wrapped up.
Bonnie?
Bonnie Spinozola, Atlantic Offshore Lobstermen's Association. I know that a couple of my members did write in and say to please be careful as to how much is opened. And I will say, and we really don't have a problem with them doing their fishing and actually you're opening the whole area. What we do seem to have an issue with is that the fact that lobster gear or fixed gear pots have not been considered at all when all of these areas are being opened. What we would ask, and we were very lucky in that we sat down with ground fishermen and sector fishermen and we carved out a bottom sharing agreement in closed area two, and they did it in an extremely gentlemanly way, and it worked out for the best for everybody. What I would ask is that the council take into consideration that there are gear types out there, and that perhaps or even I would hope that you would support whatever other gear types are there, whether it's lobster gear or something else or other gears. I don't care who they are. The two or three or however many entities would sit down together and talk about the area that looks like it may be a significant gear conflict. And like I said, these areas have been closed for 18 or 20 years or something, and clearly lobster gear has moved in. And they don't mind moving out. But they'd like to at least negotiate something if it's at all possible, and I would hope that this council would support that. Thank you.
Anyone else? Dave.
Dave Wallace again. The comment period closes February 19th. Then the administration then publishes their final rule. So if you delay this, then you will not have a comment other than what you've already commented on this issue. I'm going to state the obvious. And the obvious is if it is opened to us along with the scallop gear and the trawl gear, which it's currently open to, and this area or portions of this area is then closed, everyone will be affected. If it is open to all three gear types and the decision is made to close it to all bottom-tending gear, then it's closed to the scallop industry, the trawl industry, and the clam industry. We understand that. We don't object to that. We're not beating that drum. You know, well, all of us serve on the advisory panel for Habitat, so we're keenly aware of what's going on. and talking about lobster gear, we have very experienced captains who have been fishing on George's Banks in other capacities, either as scallops or trawls, and we have never had a gear conflict issue. And when there is some gear in a place that we would like to fish, we contact the owner of the gear and ask him if he would be willing to move his gear for 2 days while we work in that area. Then we'll move out and he can put his gear back in. And we have had a very good relationship with all those lobstermen on George's Banks. We don't want to be in conflict with anyone. You know, we just want to go do what we do, provide access to labor, access to plant facilities, because everything is processed in the clam industry. There's no fresh market for what we do, and so we have a large land-based labor force that we have to keep busy. Otherwise, we cannot maintain a good labor force. And so this is, you know, just one of the basic industries that we've been in business. The clam business has been operating since before the Second World War. So it's been around for a long time. And, you know, we just need the support of the New England Council and we're going to do whatever is best for the overall good of fishing industry in the New England and the communities that it supports. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Tom.
Just very quickly, and I think we should vote on this. Following up on George's comments, I think we need to perfect the motion to say that we're going to allow the surf clam fishery to access the entire area identified by NIMS in their proposed rule. And I think that's just a straight-up perfection we could do perhaps by consensus.
Dave Preble.
Thank you. My thing that I have to find out about here that I'm not sure of from the chart that went on the overhead, the areas that are currently proposed west of the HAPC on the north side of Coast Area 2, are they part of this area that's being opened? That's what I could not be sure of by looking at that chart. And that's what I would like to be sure of. I couldn't tell.
My understanding was yes.
They would be open.
Yes, that was the reason we notched that area out, was to encompass those areas that you're considering. That's why we drew the box the way we did.
In that case, then I'd oppose the motion.
And just to be clear with everyone, the motion will direct staff to write the letter. Is that everybody's clear with that? Okay. I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion? Twelve in favor. Opposed?
One, two, three.
Three opposed. Abstention? Two. 12, 3, 2. The motion carries. Is there any other business to come before this council?
Terry. I apologize. But in light of this morning's discussion,
Maggie must have put you up.
No,
today.
No,
I just know she did.
I'm gonna pull out another piece of paper.
No,
came with a lunch.
In light of the discussion this morning,
you got to stop eating those fortune cookies.
How come it's always me? The seventh hour, waiting for everybody to leave. In light of the discussion this morning, and maybe help Michelle and Andy do their work, I was thinking about putting forward a motion that we add nothing else to the Habitat Omnibus Amendment. That's it. What we got here is done. So I don't know if you'd entertain that or not.
We're going to try something here without objection. Okay. Anything else? Gibb?
Yeah, before we move on, without objection on that one, I'm just trying to get the intent of this, drawing a line in the sand on the habitat omnibus amendment that nothing can be added, no alternatives, none of the cat work will add to this, or?
No, in the parlance that we usually use, we're not going to put any more ornaments on the tree.
Okay, I support that intent. I just want to make sure that the process as we laid out and discussed at length is still going to move forward. All right. Thanks.
Maggie?
But that does not include the Habitat Committee Chairman's agreement earlier today to consider the gear modification options. That's still in. That's still in.
Yeah. Okay. Still?
Making sure.
It's still
in. I did not put him up to that motion, because that would have been straightened out beforehand.
We'll try one more time. Frank.
If we're done, just a thank you to Paul, because this is his last meeting.
That was my next item. Thank you, everyone. Meeting's adjourned.